That was so beautiful, I don't even want to talk. Thank you, Joanna. Thank you to the choir. Is this on? Can you hear me?
I got
the
microphone.
It's on. No, I've got this one. I'm going to wander today.
You should button your thing.
Good morning. About 10 days ago, I spent a day writing the sermon that I was going to deliver today, and I was having a lot of anxiety about it. If you've ever written anything, you know it can be hard to write. It's especially hard to write things that you think need to be moving or you want to be moving. So I was in bed, and it was about 11 o'clock, and I was just feeling anxious. I couldn't go to sleep. So all these things were running through my head. And I thought back to the water communion service when Bob told the story of the thing at the bottom, the little creature at the bottom of the river. I don't know if everybody heard this, but the story, it was basically there's a little creature at the bottom of the river, and he or she or it decides to just let go and be carried by the current. And usually I go for stories like that, but for some reason I was thinking about that story, and I thought, you know, maybe you just need to let go a little bit. Maybe you need to let go a lot. And thinking about that story, and with the aid of the sleeping pill, and I woke the next morning, and I had a bit of a vision, almost, really. I tried to picture myself up here in what has come to me to feel like a very important service for me. I hope it is for you, I can't say. But and so I tried to envision myself up here speaking the way that I think Bob does best, which is this way, kind of extemporaneously, with a few ideas and some emotion. So that's what I'm going to do today. And I want to say that it doesn't, you know, we don't always have to be like Toastmasters, right? The church is, the fellowship is welcoming to everybody, even the inarticulate. So please go with me a little bit on this one, okay? I promise to do my best. And I got a couple of jokes worked in just in case things are going badly. So I do have a little cheat sheet here. So I've been thinking about Bob a lot this month in his sermons, and I'm so glad he's back from sabbatical. I really am, personally and for the fellowship, because I think he learned a lot, and I think that we learned a lot, and that we like him a lot, and we benefit a lot from him. So that sort of stuck out in my mind a lot. And then I didn't make last week's, but the week before, when he talked about Jonah and the whale, and I love that one. Right, I love that you know, this idea. We're talking about visioning. We're talking about being called. Right, we're talking about what happens when God calls you, and you say, oh yeah, I'm there, and then you get on the bus to Sheboygan, like Jonah did, right? And I thought a lot about that, about being called and what it meant, and mostly I was thinking that I got the call, but it was from Jenny Denlinger. who called and said, you know, what are you doing for the next 4 years? You know, would you serve on the board? And I said, okay. And that was that. And I didn't choose to serve on the board because I thought I was a visionary, because I don't think that I am. I'm not ready to lead you out into the wilderness or wherever visionaries go when they need the project. But I said yes because I wanted to be a good guy, and that was that. So, but it wasn't that, really, and we'll get more into that in a few minutes. But the idea of being called is an important one, and I think that we do it here in the fellowship a lot with each other in ways that seem casual but are actually quite momentous. And that call from Jenny turned into a very momentous period of my life in terms of what I expect for myself and where I'm going and what my own personal vision is. So I've been very grateful for that particular call. And one of the things I want to talk a little bit about today is how our individual visions shape the whole. So Bob's been talking about your own vision, your own kind of thoughts about your life. But my job, I think, today is to help guide us, have a conversation about how one person's vision affects another person, or a group of people, or the world. and that sounds like a big job, and that's why I'm nervous. And you see it all throughout the fellowship. I've been especially thinking a lot about the presidents recently, and Vera, Frankie, Joe French, people who really are, who fall into that category of supervisionary, if you will. People who are not just going to be casual visionaries with their lives and with the church. And I think we all do it. I think we all do what we can. But I also think that we will end up working together as a whole really beautifully. The visioning process, I don't know when the last time we did it, I guess formally, was about 12 years ago. Is that right? Does anybody know? But it's been a while. Certainly we've done great things and we've planned for our future. You know, we bought the land. There was a plan to build a building. There are all kinds of things happening that we're thinking about in the future. But in terms of a congregation-wide vision where we actually come together, throw out ideas, and then construct a document that that helps us move forward, has not happened recently. So it's really important for us to do that. And just one more word on visioning, and it's not an easy conversation to have, I think, because we're so many different people, and we want to have polity, right? We want to make sure that it's not just one person's vision; that's everybody's vision. And that puts, you know, that takes the pressure off me. You know, the only visioning thing I went to here at the church was a couple of years ago. The board established an ad hoc community for land use. We were trying to think about what we wanted to do with the land now that it became apparent that we weren't going to be building a building on it anytime soon. And it was a fascinating meeting. And it was really a meeting just to kind of throw out ideas, right? And when the word yurt came up, I said to myself, do not roll your eyes. Do not roll your eyes. You can control this meeting. And then the whole thing just fell apart, and it was just this collection of great ideas. Mm-hmm. Right? It was just this wonderful, just because I thought that was like, you know, that's a visionary idea. That's not something, you know, and that's thinking out of the box. I'm stuck in the box. I like being in control of things, and that's part of the reason why I'm doing this today, is to throw that control out again, is to kind of let go. And to begin to imagine and envision what you would be if you could be something. And it takes daring, I think, and I congratulate myself. So that meeting was fascinating, and the committee didn't go anywhere because, for practical reasons, not because it wasn't a good committee or we didn't think it was going to move forward, but for practical reasons, which are too long to explain, we didn't go forward with that. But the visioning is important, and we do want to move ahead with it. So I want to talk a little bit about our individual visions. I think that as adults and as young people, we, with our characters intact and our movement into the future happening, we all are making visionary choices every day. I can remember the exact moment when I told Paul that I would move to New York to live with him. We were walking across the plaza, Lincoln Plaza, what was it called?
Lincoln Center.
Lincoln Center Plaza, on our way to the opera. And I made the decision right then and there, and I said, I'm going to move to New York and live with you. And that, for me, that was a visionary moment in my personal life, because you can see what happened. And, you know, there were other moments for me, the children, and there also, you also create visions of how you want to be in life, or the kind of person you want to be. And those happen as well. Sometimes they happen casually, but a lot of times I think that they deserve attention. And each of us do that. I can talk to anybody in this room about what I think your FUFIC vision has been. I don't know all of you well enough to know kind of what your personal visions have been, but I know that you all have them, and that you're living your visions the best that you can. Things come up, and you know, you can't always live the exact vision that you had set out for yourself, but you adapt and change. And we've done that as a fellowship because you have to, and because it's the, you know, it's the mature thing to do. But our individual visions are important to us, obviously on a personal level, because we are who we are, but they're also deeply important to us in this congregation. We really do love each other, I think. I think we really do get along, and we really are a beloved community, and I really think that everybody wants to be a part of something really strong and committed. And how we move our individual visions into a more communal-based vision is an art, I think. And again, I think sometimes it happens casually, as in just a telephone call from the nominating committee, a very straightforward thing. But then it has the possibility to blossom into something really remarkable. And I feel like that call was the one call that I got in the last, well, since accepting the children, you know, being born, was the one that's affected me the most deeply in the last 4 or 5 years of my life. I've grown so much from that. And because of that, you know, I'd like to think that what I'm able to put back into the church will help us grow and will help strengthen your individual lives and our communal life. Gosh, I'm talking a lot. So the point is that we're all visionaries, automatically. You can't say I'm not a visionary. We're all visionaries in our personal lives, and we're coming together this year to do it as a group. And I'm really excited about that. I wasn't excited about it. I was so much like Jonah at the beginning of this. Like, I'm happy. Rewrite the bylaws, midterm vacancies, come on, bring it on. But the idea of imagining something is hard for me. So I'm so glad that we're doing it together. It really means a lot. And, you know, I searched far and wide. I went through every great religious tradition in the entire world. I combed all of them recently, looking for sacred texts on visioning, and I came up with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Well, this actually wasn't, I found it after. It was in a different part of the library. We needed a book to read to Riley, but here it is. And I think this book is remarkable. I hope everybody's read it. Let's keep this positive. Has everybody read it? Well, for those of you who are shy or don't want to be berated, I'll just tell you, it's a story of a poor boy named Charlie Bucket who lives eating cabbage soup every night, gets one egg on Saturdays if there's enough left over, and he lives with his grandparents who sleep, four of them in the same bed, head to head. And he's very poor, but he's a very modest and nice boy, and the world is filled with stories. His grandfather tells him all these great stories. And in the town where they live is the chocolate factory, and it's run by the very secretive Willy Wonka. Nobody knows who works there because the townspeople are not kind of coming and going. Willy Wonka has a golden, he puts out 5 golden tickets and says, whoever gets these golden tickets will come and have a tour of the factory. Ta-da! And so the book is all about the tour. It's all about the children who get the golden tickets. It's all about the tour. It's all about the magic of the place and the wonder of it. And I think this book feels so much like a UU book to me. Willy Wonka is such a UU character when you think about it. He's a little eccentric. He's very smart. He does good for the world, right? He makes chocolate. It keeps kids happy. And it's not like chocolate like today where kids have candy constantly or whatever. It's still represented as a very sweet and lovely kind of thing for children, the imagination of all of these wonderful chocolates that he makes. So he makes these chocolates, and he does this thing with the kids. And they all come, and you know, being the good non-UU that he is, you know, all the kids go through, and children, some of them, they're not happy stories, all of them. Some of them get into mischief and end up being squeezed and sucked up, you know, chocolate rivers and that kind of thing. But at the end of the book, no matter how naughty they are, they all go home with their truckloads, their lifetime supply of chocolate, which is like universal salvation for a kid, right? I'm not kidding, right? That's it. So Willy Wonka is a universalist. Every kid, no matter how mischievous he is or she, gets to go home with a truckload of chocolate. And I love that part of the story. It doesn't happen in the movie, which I think was a mistake. But the reason why I love it, one of the reasons why I love it, is I really think that Willy Wonka is a visionary, right? Think about it. And by the way, he has the whole social justice thing, right? He takes the Oompa Loompas, which are being terrorized by the snaz gang or, you know, guys that are eating them back in Oompa Loompa Land. He brings them all over. He does a good thing for people. He brings all the Oompa Loompas and he puts them to work in the factory and gives them cocoa beans, which is all they really want in the whole life. So it's a great thing, right? He does this great social justice work as well as running a chocolate factory. He's got it all. So the thing I like about it is that, you know, what's not said in the book is at some point, Willy Wonka sits down at his desk after dinner and he thinks, okay, I'm a businessman. I've got like 900 Oompa Loompas. I've got this chocolate factory. I don't have a wife. I don't have any children. What am I going to do? How am I going to guarantee the success of this incredible endeavor for all the years to come? And he sits and he thinks, what can I do that's interesting and that's going to get the results I want? So he goes to the kids, right? He goes right to the kids. He gets the kids. And he gets the one kid. gets Charlie's bucket, all the other ones go home, you know, purple or thin or whatever. However, they all go home mangled because they've all been caught in machinery. I love Roald Dahl. He's very, let's throw a little darkness into that. But it's mostly done off stage. So he gets the one modest good kid. And what does he do at the end of the story? He shoots up through the factory. We're going in a glass elevator. We're pressing up and out. The glass elevator shoots up, breaks the roof of the factory, and they're over the chocolate factory. And he says, did you like that today? Charlie says, yeah, of course I loved it. And he says, well, I'm giving it to you. I'm giving you the whole kit and caboodle. And Charlie says, why? Why would you give it to me? He says, because you'll do what you know is right. You'll let me train you. You'll let us have this vision, this shared vision, because you're a child and you know what children want. And you won't forget that. I can't have an adult do this. So that's the point that I love about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, is that you have somebody who's thinking imaginatively and correctly, and he gets the desired result. So I think we could do that, right? I really do. I hope we can. Well, I think that's basically what I wanted to say this morning. I'm looking forward to this, and I think we're going to have fun. And I have one other thing I wanted to tell everybody. Hello. I'm going to ask the congregation now to do something. And I know I always get nervous when the minister says stuff like that, like, oh, please don't make me, you know, dance or move my arms up and down or whatever. I'm gonna ask you to let go. Oh, the other thing, I have one other point I wanted to make that I think was important. Part of the envisioning process for us is gonna be letting go. I think that the last few years have been great years for the fellowship, but, you know, in terms of kind of where we are, we may need to let go. Some of us may need to let go more than others. People who've been here for a long time may need to be thinking about things, as Einstein said, we need to change our thinking a little bit. Maybe not, but we might need to. And, you know, we don't often talk about, we haven't talked about the future much. And I think that a lot of us, some of us were disappointed when the fellowship hall didn't happen right away when we wanted it to. So I would just encourage people, as we go forward with this vision, to kind of let go of whatever things are troubling you about the future. If you have things that are troubling you about the future, or the potential to trouble you for the future, just let them go, if you can. I mean, do your best. It's not easy, because it's suffering and sadness. And there's definitely been, I think, a feeling of loss from some people over the last few years. Paul and I came when everything was just so electric. And we will never leave. We will never leave. But if you need to let go of things, think about it. Try and come at this with a completely fresh perspective. So bearing that in mind, what I'd like us to do is I would like us to leave the church. And I'm going to ask that everyone walk in single file and keep the sanctity of our service in your mind. So please don't talk. And when we get where we're going, I would like everyone to form a circle. Just one circle. And the choir is going to intermix with the congregation a little bit, because we're going to be singing our closing hymn not in the church. We're going to have a couple of minutes of thinking somewhere else. So I would encourage you just to follow me. And
I thought you said you weren't going to leave us out in the wilderness.
Actually, I am going to leave you out in the wilderness. That was a lie.